the Srimad Bhagavatam to the very means of conquest, one should offer respectful obeisances unto the personality of God and Divine. Unto Narayana, each of the supermost human being, unto Mother Saraswati, the goddess of learning, and unto Srila Vyasadeva, the author. Srinivatam Svakata Krishna Punyashoma Kirtana Vidyantas Kohiya Bhadrani Evidvunoti Purit Sadam Nasta Prayeshu Bhadreshu Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya Bhagavati Uttama Shloke Bhakti Bhavati Naishtati. I'm reading, I just recently read this verse and I liked it, so I'm going to read it for everyone. If I like it, you gotta like it too. It's in the Srimad Bhagavatam, the third canto, chapter 32, Entanglement in Fruitive Activities. Anyone here has ever been entangled in fruitive activities? Everyone. Okay, so you might be able to read it. This is like the next to the last verse, I think. One of the last verses. This is the last verse. No, it's only one more verse after this. Okay, so this is text 42. I don't know what I said before. Vakijata viragaya shanta chitaya siddhatam nimatsaraya shuchaye yasyaham preyasam priyaha. So everyone can repeat word for word. Bahi.
Bahi.
For what is outside?
For what is outside?
Jata viragaya.
Jata viragaya.
To him who has developed detachment.
To him who has developed detachment.
Shanta chitaya.
Shanta chitaya.
Whose mind is peaceful.
Whose mind is peaceful.
Diyatam.
Diyatam.
Let this be instructed.
Let this be instructed.
Nimatsaraya.
Nimatsaraya.
Non-envious.
Non-envious.
Shuchaye.
Shuchaye.
Perfectly cleansed.
Perfectly cleansed.
Yasya.
Yasya.
Of whom?
Of whom?
Aham.
Aham.
I.
Priyasam. Priyasam.
Of all that is very dear.
Of all that is very dear.
Priyaha.
Priyaha.
The most dear.
The most dear.
Translation. This instruction should be imparted by the spiritual master to persons who have taken the Supreme Personality of Godhead to be more dear than anything, who are not envious of anyone, who are perfectly cleansed, and who have developed detachment for that which is outside the purview of Krishna consciousness. Purport. By Srila Prabhupada. In the beginning, no one can be elevated to the highest stage of devotional service. Here, bhakta means one who does not hesitate to accept the reformatory processes for becoming a bhakta. So, I'm just going to explain that a little bit. Here, the word bhakta. Bhakta means devoted. Now, we use that word, you know, bhakta Joe, bhakta Fred, you know, just somebody who's not even initiated as a bhakta. There, if you're using the word, we are all devotees, but there are different scales or grades of devotees. So what a real bhakta, pure bhakta, is someone who's just fully devoted to Krishna and has no other interest whatsoever. But here, Prabhupada says the word bhakta. In the beginning, no one can be elevated to the highest stage of devotional service. In the beginning. In the beginning, you can't. You're not that. So when we say Bhakta Joe and Bhakta John, they're just the new people coming. They're not elevated to the highest position. So here, Bhakta, the word Bhakta in this verse, means one who does not hesitate to accept the reformatory processes for becoming a Bhakta. So in other words, there's a process for becoming a pure devotee. So here the word bhakta or pure devotee is used for the person who accepts whatever those reformatory activities are in order to get to the platform of being a pure devotee. In other words, I have to chant Hare Krishna, I have to read these books, I have to refrain from certain activities, I have to refrain from certain things, and I have to do certain things. And I accept all that. So that's, in this case, this is what the word bhakti means. So we fortunately fit into that category, at least I'm assuming everyone does, but we're all here for that reason, because we want to make some spiritual progress. So now, even if we're not following everything, because we may not be following everything, but we want to eventually come to that platform. We're making an endeavor. We're trying. We're doing something. Because Krishna consciousness, in the beginning, lots of times people think it's all or nothing. I have to completely surrender, or I can't do it, so forget it. No, it's you do what you can. Whatever you do, whatever little advancement you're making, that will stay with you eternally. You never lose it. And then you want to just do more. You keep adding to it. It's like a spiritual bank account. And then you don't lose that money. In your material bank account, everything is... When you leave, it's all gone. The next life, you got to start all over again with your Christmas club or whatever you have. The older people would know that. I don't know if they still have that. But I remember when I was a kid, you put like 50 cents a week in a bank. It's called a Christmas club. 50 cents. I don't even think you got any interest, but they saved you money. And then at the end of the year, you take it all out and buy presents for people. It was a Christmas club. So here, it's like that. It's an eternal bank account. And whatever progress we do, it stays with us eternally. So we never lose it. So we want to try to put in as much into that account as we can. So even if we're not putting in 100% of our energy into that account at this time, even if it's 1%, we're doing something. You can't do more. Do what you can. In order to become a devotee of the Lord, one has to accept... What do you think?
Some sacrifices.
Yeah. Anybody want to guess what the word is? I'm just asking, what do you think?
Accept devotional service.
What?
Accept devotional service.
Yeah. It's all true.
Austerities.
Anyway, I'll tell you, one has to accept a spiritual master and inquire from him. It doesn't say submissively, but in the Bhagavad Gita it says submissively, not challengingly, inquire from him about how to progress in devotional service. So this is the first thing. You have to have somebody to teach you. You know, you want to be a doctor, you don't read a book and just put a plaque on your door and be a doctor now. You know, you have to go through a whole...
Med school.
You have to go through first college, then anyway, keep going down lower and lower. It's okay. There's the amount of people here we don't really need. So you have to have a teacher, you know, to get qualified in a lot of material things. You need a teacher, but for spiritual things, I think I don't need a teacher. You need a teacher. You don't know anything. You know, we come into this world, we don't know anything. We begin human life when we start asking, why am I here? Who am I? What is the purpose of life? Tato Brahma Jignasa. Now in the human form of life is the time to inquire about the absolute truth. So that is the beginning of human life. But we don't know all the answers. We just start inquiring. But we can get all the answers from a bona fide spiritual master. So that's a very important point. And the Bhagavad Gita also says you have to approach a bona fide spiritual master. And this is humility. We shouldn't be so puffed up. I don't need anybody. I can do it on my own. It's like so proud. Krishna doesn't like his devotees being proud. Doesn't like anybody proud. He cuts off their heads and does things like that. Shishupal, cut off his head. Pundraka, cut off his head. These people, foolish people, thinking they're God. And then other devotees become proud. They're not devotees. These are demons become proud. Devotees become proud, he doesn't cut off the head, he just chastises it. You know, Indra became proud, so he lifted the COVID on him and held it for 7 days until Indra started to realize, oh, it's something wrong. So, and Brahma became proud, stealing Krishna's cowherd boyfriends and cows. Let me see, what is he going to do now? And then when he looks again, they're all there, and he gets bewildered by his energy. Brahma says, somebody else may think they know Krishna. As far as I'm concerned, I don't understand them at all. So when devotees become proud, and they do become proud, I mean, a lot of times, Krishna humbles his devotees, one way or another. And one thing is his spiritual master. The spiritual master is there to try to keep the devotee in line. There's one very nice devotee, he passed away, Tomo Krishna Maharaj. And he had this tendency to become proud, and Prabhupada put him back down to, like, he was a temple commander in L.A. temple, and he was proud. And Prabhupada says, you know, if there are millions of universes emanating from Mahavishnu is an expansion of Krishna. And from Mahavishnu pours, all the different universes come out. And billions and billions of universes, this is one universe. And in this universe, there are billions of planets. And on these planets, there are different continents and rivers and oceans on all these different planets. Have all these different things. And then there's one planet that has all continents and countries, and in one country there's so many states, and in one state there's so many cities, and in one city, in Los Angeles, there's so many buildings, and in one building there's a temple commander and he thinks he's something. So you look in you have to look at the different ways of seeing things. So Prabhupada was pointing this out because Tomo Krishna became a little puffed up. And then when he was a Maharaj, he asked Srila Prabhupada this question. What is the difference between blaspheming, because we should never blaspheme devotees of the Lord, it's one of the offenses against the holy name. What's the difference between blaspheming, fault-finding, and calling a spade a spade? So Srila Prabhupada says, well, just like I say to you, you're nothing but a small fig. That's calling a spade a spade. And what were the other two things? Huh?
Last thing you spoke of.
No, I'm just telling you what Prabhupada said. So you always put, so the spiritual master, you have an authority that helps keep you from getting too puffed up. And because I met this one crazy person who wanted to be humble, and he tried to do things to humiliate himself in order to become humble. Out in the street, he would do stupid things. And he's thinking, this is humble. That's not humble. Humble is when you accept someone as an authority and you follow what they tell you. They know better than me. That's humble. When you find someone who is a genuine representative of Krishna and you do what they want you to do, that's humility. So, to serve a devotee, to chant the holy name according to a certain counting method, to worship the deity, to hear Srimad Bhagavatam or Bhagavad Gita from a realized person, and to live in a sacred place where devotional service is not disturbed, are the first out of 64 devotional activities for making progress in devotional service. One who has accepted these five chief activities is called a devotee. So, there's an easy way to remember this, is deities, devotees, nam, that's the holy name, dam, the holy place, Srimad Bhagavatam. So you can remember, deities, devotees, nam, dam, Srimad Bhagavatam. These are the five most important things in devotional service. So we should all try to associate with the deities, try to come and associate with the devotees, and read Srimad Bhagavatam, and try to, when you live in a holy place, you in your own home, you can make a temple and make it a holy place where these activities are going on. And then there's, of course, chanting. You have to chant a prescribed number of rounds. One must be prepared to offer the necessary respect and honor to the spiritual master. So now, Srila Prabhupada, he is everyone's spiritual master. I mean, even today, everyone in ISKCON, he's our spiritual master. He's everyone's spiritual master. But here, he was everyone's Diksha's guru and Shiksha guru at this time. But yet he had to write this because he has to teach us how to properly deal and treat the spiritual master. So it's not just for himself, but he's telling the principle of it. One must be prepared to offer the necessary respect and honor to the spiritual master. He's also thinking of his spiritual master who he offers respect and honor. He should not be unnecessarily envious of his god brothers. This is kind of interesting, because sometimes when a god brother or god sister is doing really well, we become envious. This is not, and also it says unnecessarily envious. I mean, it's not necessary at any time to be envious, but it seems to be that there's always maybe some little envy, but it doesn't really affect you. It doesn't stop the way you're acting or behaving in that way. But unnecessarily envious seems to be more when you're so envious that it really disturbs you. And there's envy, there's jealousy. I'm not sure of the differences, but one, it seems like envy is more, I'm not sure which one is which. One of them is with malice, that not only does this person, I don't want this person to have this, I want them to also, I just want that. That's, I might be jealous, I want that too. But envy is more, not only do I want it, I don't want him to have it. You know, so it's really deep rooted, and it's not very healthy for your spiritual life. So we become envious because someone is doing more to serve Krishna and please Krishna than me, and I don't like that. So I become envious of it. So here, I'm thinking Prabhupada wrote this. Why did he write it? It's because it was going on. Devotees were becoming envious of other devotees. So he wrote it. And this Bhagavatam, because lots of times when something in particular was going on, he would actually preach about it. Like, for instance, Gajendra, the alligator, he was the elephant when he was caught by an alligator and he was biting. And at this same time, Madhvis, who was a swami, he fell down. And Prabhupada was using, at this same time, he was using this story to explain how we have to fight Maya. Sometimes, like for the alligator, in the water, he can beat the elephant. But on the land, the elephant will beat the alligator. So sometimes we have to change our situation in order to fight Maya better. He didn't specifically mention this devotee, but everyone at the time knew that's exactly who he was talking about. So sometimes you have to change your ashram, he said, in order to fight Maya better. For instance, you're a brahmachari and you're very agitated, so it might be better for you to get married, and you can be stronger in fighting Maya. So here he's talking about unnecessarily envious of his god brothers. He may also be talking about his own god brothers who are envious of him. and criticizing. You know, this is a result of envy, is you find faults. Oh, that other story with the fault finding. Blaspheming, he says, it's like there's nothing there. There's no fault, there's nothing wrong, and still you're saying things about them. Like, for instance, it's Ramachandra Khan, who was criticizing Lord Chaitanya for eating sweets, and he's a sannyasi, and he's eating sweets. And why is he saying he's eating sweets? He didn't see him eating sweets. He saw there were ants in the room, so he assumed he's eating sweets. So there's not even any fault, but he's blaspheming. He's trying to criticize Lord Chaitanya. So this is blasphemy. And fault finding is there's actually a fault there, but you're magnifying it. So none of them are any good. Calling a spade isn't so bad. Rather, if a god brother is more enlightened and advanced in Krishna consciousness, one should accept him as almost equal to the spiritual master. And one should be happy to see such godbrothers advance in Krishna consciousness. Almost equal to the spiritual master. So you're envious of this guy, but then you're supposed to see him now almost equal. Come on, Prabhupada. So somehow we have to try. This is what Prabhupada says. We should try to. Well, that's what we used to do this in ISKCON all the time, is we offer obeisances to different devotees, except my humble obeisances, especially if you think you committed some offense mentally against them or anything, you offer them your respectful obeisances. I don't see so much offering obeisances nowadays. It's like, ain't got time. Thank you, I got time for that. So we gotta try to get back into doing the proper thing. A devotee should always be very kind to the general public in instructing Krishna consciousness, because that is the only solution for getting out of the clutches of Maya. So, how are you kind to the general public? By giving them Krishna consciousness. You're not kind to the general public by giving them some shelter. I mean, that might be kind, but that's not real kindness. It doesn't help anything. I was just in India for over 5 weeks, and in Calcutta, there's people, women with children, sleeping on the streets. They just have their blankets right on the street in Calcutta. Cars go by, they sleep there. Well, myself and my wife were walking, and then a rat ran by, and my wife jumped, and one of the ladies was laying down, and she starts laughing. It's like, it's a rat. What's a big deal? I was thinking about, I really wanted to help these people, because it's natural for devotees to feel compassion when someone is suffering. I'm not saying I'm a great devotee, but I think anyone in any situation, unless you live in India all the time, would feel that way. But then I thought, what can I do? I mean, and I thought, okay, let's just say I brought them to a 5-star hotel. They got this beautiful room, bathroom, shower, and I give them all kinds of nice food. And then the next day, they're back out on the street again. How is that helping? So then I extended it. Okay, what if I did it for the rest of their life? I gave them this beautiful place for the rest of their life, gave them everything. Then in the next life, they're back out on the street again. It doesn't help them. You really have to go to the source of the problem, and that's the lack of Krishna consciousness. You've got to get out of this material world to solve these problems. You can't solve them by just temporarily eliminating them, because it's just temporary. You have a boil that's hurt so much, you blow on it. Oh, it feels so good.
It doesn't help.
Blowing on a boil does not help you at all. It just makes it feel good a little better for a little while. It doesn't really solve the problem. You have to, you know, go to a doctor or anywhere you want to do it. Cut it open, get all this pus out, and then you're okay. Then you can get better. You know, so just going to the symptoms, just solving the symptoms of the problem doesn't help. So what I did do is we got some offered cookies, and we brought offered cookies to them so they could take prasadam, so they can eat, which I'm sure they'd like to eat. And but it's prasadam, so they're making spiritual advancement while they're eating. Other than that, I cannot think of anything you can do for these people. Try to make them devotees, but they're probably good devotees anyway. They were so nice. They were really nice. They, like, we were looking for something that's helpful. Oh, no, it's right down here, you know. It's like they were perfectly sane, nice people. They just happened to be unfortunate. They're bad karma. We don't know what they did in the previous life, but they're, you know, out on the street now. And, you know, we'd like to help them. So the way to help them is Krishna consciousness. There was a devotee once, sannyasi, giving class in the New York temple. And he had arranged for some other devotees to interrupt class and do a little skit. So while he's giving class, he's talking about something similar to this. You know, helping, it's like, you know, putting a Band-Aid on something that needs more than a Band-Aid. It doesn't really solve the problem. Anyway, he's speaking about this, and then in the class, somebody just starts yelling, "Help! Help! My husband is drowning! He's drowning!" So first thing is, because it's New York, the security guards are kind of kicking him out. then the other person is... No, actually the person says, "Help, help, I'm drowning." And then the woman says, "My husband, he's drowning. Somebody save my husband." And then somebody else comes up and says, "I'm a social worker. I'll save him. That's what I do. I help people." And he takes off his jacket and he just pretends he's swimming, and he goes out to this guy in the middle of the floor and he kind of wrestles with him, and he comes back and brings the woman up his coat and says, "Here you are, ma'am. I saved your husband." And then she says, "You didn't save him. You just gave me his coat." And then the sannyasi begins speaking again. And says, when we just save the helping the body, it's just like helping a dress. It's not really helping the person at all. And we really have to become convinced of this. This is the only way we can get. That's why it's stated that the highest welfare work is giving Krishna consciousness. There is nothing higher than that. Because then you can end repeated birth and death. In Vrindavan, there was a magician, and he was doing tricks for Srila Prabhupada. And he was in a room with devotees, and Prabhupada was like taking quarters out of his ears, or not quarters, rupees, and doing all kinds of things. And the devotees were thinking it's becoming a little too, you know, intimate, too close, too jokey. It wasn't so good. But Prabhupada enjoyed it. He was enjoying it. But then Prabhupada told him, can you make birth, disease, old age, and death disappear? And Prabhupada said, "Then I'm a better magician than you." Yeah, I'm going to read that one sentence again. A devotee should always be very kind to the general public in instructing Krishna consciousness, because that is the only solution for getting out of the clutches of Maya. So there's no other way. That is really humanitarian work, for it is the way to show mercy to other people who need it very badly. They need it very badly. It's so nice. Prabhupada uses these very common words that, like, you know, I would say, "Oh, he needs it really bad." They need it very badly. They really need it. And that's why he came here. He came in. And in this next year, it will be 50 years that he came and arrived here in Boston. And he came to do this humanitarian work. It's the highest service that no one else has ever done. No one else came to do this. And his guru had instructed so many people, but no one was having any success. And Prabhupada finally did it. Why? He needed very badly. Even when he came here, he said everyone is in ignorance and passion. He didn't see anyone in goodness. Just ignorance and passion. The word Sushu Shabir Rataya indicates a person who faithfully engages in serving the spiritual master. So faithfully engages in serving the spiritual master. Now this part is nice also. One should give personal service and all kinds of comforts to the spiritual master. So that's what the disciple does. The disciple takes care of the spiritual master's physical body. And the spiritual master takes care of the disciple's soul. So we have to, what can we do for them? We can't, you know, chant Hare Krishna, Maharaj, or Prabhu, or, you know, we can't instruct them. They're way beyond that. It's a bona fide spiritual master. So we can serve their body, make them as comfortable as we can. And this is instructions for how we can deal with our spiritual master. A devotee who does so is also a bona fide candidate for taking this instruction. Okay, one should give personal service and all kinds of comforts to the spiritual master. A devotee who does so is also a bona fide candidate for taking this instruction. The word bahir jata virakaya means a person who has developed detachment from external and internal material propensities. Not only is he detached from activities which are not connected to Krishna consciousness, but he should be internally averse to the material way of life. So this takes a lot of chanting. A lot of hearing and chanting. This hearing and chanting, we all have a heart, and we all have a lot of dirty things in the heart. You can't see it with an x-ray or with an MRI, but it's there. The spiritual master can see it, and he gives you a process for cleaning it. And if we clean these things out, then we can become purified of these desires that are materialistic desires, desires to just gratify the senses. So there's a process, and we have to have faith. But we can't have faith. Our faith has to be very strong in order to be determined to continue with the process, even though I'm only cleaning a little bit at a time. But we shouldn't be thinking, I'm going to just do it and get my heart clean, and it's just going to be maybe 1 year. It takes a whole lifetime. You know, we got so much dirt in there for millions of lifetimes. And we have to start cleaning it out. But you start somewhere, better late than never, you know, to start cleaning it out. From the chanting of Hare Krishna, reading Srimad Bhagavatam, reading Bhagavad Gita, associating with devotees, having darshan of the deities, these are all four purifying activities. And if we do this, it cleanses the heart. Even sweeping the floor, you know, if here we have every Wednesday and Sunday, there's a group of people who come and sweep the floor. And then that's, you're sweeping the floor and you're sweeping your heart, you're cleansing your heart. Same time. You're getting two jobs done at once. This is the floor you should sweep. So such a person must be non-envious and should think of the welfare of all living entities. Not only of the human beings, but living entities other than human beings. So we shouldn't be just killing animals. Once there was a cockroach, who probably caught a cockroach in the apartment. It was the summer, so he opened the window, was open, and he threw the cockroach out and said, "Now I give you the world." It is. up a spot. We have these cups in Hartford or here, and a piece of paper. Whenever you see a spider or some bug, we get them, put the paper underneath, and bring them outside. It won't work, but I don't understand how it works. Hey, so, you have to be kind to all living entities and try to help them. We were driving from Boston. Actually, we had three vans from Boston. I think it was 1973, maybe 1972. And we went all the way down to Mexico City. We did San Catan on the way, book distribution. But on the way to Mexico, we're on this desert, and we decided to stop by some cactus, big cactus, and around the cactus we had a big kirtan. I don't know what happened after that. But we tried to purify that cactus. And we went down, actually, we were distributing books in Mexico City, and we didn't speak any Spanish. I don't know if maybe one of the devotees spoke Spanish, but we learned a mantra for selling the books. I think I remember it, so any Spanish devotees may be able to understand or may not be able to understand. But we give our books, Tama uno, es la yoga, es la benedicción. Ultima parama sociedad humana es la ciencia suprema, dinero por Dios, por favor. And then they'd ask, like usually they'd say, someone come to you, if I come, I'd say, 5 pesos. And then they would ask other stuff, and we'd say, no, compadre. And then they'd have to buy the book to find out what it is, because I can't tell them anything else. And we were selling so many more books than the Mexican devotees. Because the Mexican devotees would talk to a person for a long time before they sell them a book. We couldn't talk to them. We had nothing else to say. So it was really good. We did really well in there. It was Bahu Laska. He was in charge. We had three bands. Bahu Laska was in charge. It was nice. And we tried to do something, I think it was more like the Shikshastaka, cleanses your heart, the highest yoga or something. But the translation, what I said, I don't remember too much. The Spanish, es la yoga, es la benedicción, ultima parama sociedad humana. What is the English?
What was that? What did it say again? I couldn't hear you.
Anyway, that's the yoga. This yoga.
It's yoga, right.
It had to be yoga because it couldn't be religion. If it was a religion, we wouldn't be able to do it in Mexico City at the time. So it had to be yoga. Yoga was okay, religion wasn't, so we had to say yoga. But then we did say dinero por Dios.
For Dios, yes.
God. Por favor.
Yes. Please.
Es yoga. Es la benedicción.
This yoga is a benediction.
Highest benediction. This yoga is the highest benediction. Something like that. I don't remember. But we tried to say something that was actually really Krishna conscious and not just, I don't know what else people say nowadays. But and we'd have kirtans in Mexico City. We'd be walking and having a kirtan. Hundreds of people would gather around. It was like so nice. And we'd walk by, there's a butcher, and he would come out and say, Hare Krishna! They were really nice people, really nice people. At least in 1972 or 73, whatever it was. Okay. Such a person must be non-envious and should think of the welfare of all living entities, not only of the human being, but living entities other than human beings. The word shuchaye means one who is cleansed, both externally and internally. To become actually cleansed externally and internally, one should chant the holy name of the Lord, Hare Krishna, or Vishnu, constantly. So if you're chanting, now normally, another place the Prabhupada says how we purify ourselves externally by taking bath and like this, and internally by chanting. But here he says, purify ourselves internally and externally by just chanting constantly. So, I don't know. I mean, I would think if you're chanting constantly, you're still going to take a bath. I remember when this was years ago, my father passed away, but when we were at his home, and we stayed over, and my wife was taking a shower, and she's chanting in the shower, and my father says, she's sinking in the bathroom. It's like only in movies you do that. But you chant anywhere, all the time. That's the whole thing. That's how you become cleansed. The word diyatam means that knowledge of Krishna consciousness should be offered by the spiritual master. The spiritual master must not accept a disciple who is not qualified. He should not be professional and should not accept disciples for monetary gains. So you find, you know, somebody has a lot of money and they want to be a disciple, but you don't just take them just because they have a lot of money. They have to be qualified. I was thinking, now I don't know, this is just all speculation, but I know George Harrison was asked about getting initiated, and Prabhupada said no. What Prabhupada said is no, you better just keep preaching the way you're preaching. Now I'm thinking, because he saw he wasn't really so qualified spiritually. He was a devotee, and he did a lot of service, but was he qualified to start following the four regular principles of chanting 16 rounds every day? Was he ready to do that? So rather than say you're not qualified, he says, no, better for preaching, better continue. I don't know. I'm just saying, maybe. Because he didn't accept him as his, he didn't initiate George Harrison. And George Harrison wanted to get initiated, and George Harrison had a lot of money, but he didn't do it. So it's an important point that we shouldn't get influenced by one's, you know, as a guru, by one's external position, very rich, very famous, whatever it may be. The bona fide spiritual master must see the bona fide qualities of a person whom he is going to initiate. So can anybody think of a bona fide quality of a person wanting to get initiated? Anybody here initiated?
Chanting constantly?
What?
Chanting the 16 rounds.
Right, chanting is 16 rounds at least every day, following the regulated principles.
Yeah.
Right. Qualities, what kind of qualities? That he's sincere. That's the most important quality. That he sincerely wants Krishna, and he's going to do whatever it takes to get Krishna. An unworthy person should not be initiated. The spiritual master should train his disciple in such a way so that in the future, only the Supreme Personality of Godhead will be the dearmost goal of his life. So, it's not that now you're initiated, the dearmost goal of your life is Krishna. Yeah. No, but the spiritual master then has to train you so that the dearmost goal of your life will be Krishna. So when you get initiated, the spiritual master has to try to train you to get to this platform. It's not that just initiation. Initiation is the beginning. You know, we initiate, you begin. It's not like the end. Now I'm initiated, I'm a pure devotee. I'm really a pure devotee, don't have to follow any principle. I can do anything I want now. Well, you're not initiated. You could serve me. But initiation is the beginning. From that point, we have to become Krishna conscious. In these two verses, I only read the one, The qualities of a devotee are fully explained. One who has actually developed all the qualities listed in these verses is already elevated to the post of a devotee. So now we can think that none of us are devotees, because if you're, well, unless you really, you could think you're a devotee, but if you're being honest with yourself, we don't have all these qualities. If one has not developed all these qualities, okay, this has something to do with us here, he still has to fulfill these conditions in order to become a perfect devotee. So he has to come to this platform. So he may not have it, but if he continues the process, he will eventually come to the platform of being purified and develop all these qualities. And we don't have to make a separate endeavor to develop these qualities. All we have to do is surrender to Krishna, chant our rounds, follow regular principles, go to morning program, do service. And if we do this every day, we will develop all these godly qualities. We don't have to like try, now I have to try to be peaceful. Automatically you'll become peaceful by becoming Krishna conscious. So you don't have to make a separate effort to develop any good quality. You just have to just chant Hare Krishna. That's the most important thing. So, does anyone have any questions on anything that I said or read?
Is that possible for a person that want to be Krishna conscious and develop love for Krishna without devotional service?
No, it's not possible to achieve anything without devotional service. I mean, even demigod worshippers, even they have to do some devotional service. There's always some something they have to do for Vishnu. So, devotional service, everyone has to do some devotional service. But we're saying to do all devotional service and nothing else. So, there's another thing called Agyata Sukriti. It's unknowing devotional service. You do devotional service, you don't even know it. Just like somebody might, you know, devotees on Harinam or something, and someone goes by, like a devotee drops something and he picks it up and gives it to him. He's doing some devotional service. Or you're driving and you try to get in and he lets you in front of him. You know, that's the beginning of devotional service if you're driving for Krishna. You know. So Agyata Sukriti means unknowing devotional service, so they don't even know it and they still benefit from it. But everyone has to engage in devotional service in order to purify ourselves. But there's nine processes: hearing, chanting, remembering, serving, worshiping, giving up everything. There's nine different processes of devotional service. And you can do any one of them or all of them, and you get purified. Yes?
You mentioned that many of them might know this but what are the ritualistic principles that you would just talk about?
Ritualistic principles? Regulated principles. Okay, that makes a big difference. Okay, regulated principles. No meat, fish, or eggs. No illicit sex. That's sex outside of marriage. No gambling. No intoxication. And I can explain what intoxication is.
Does that include coffee and tea?
Yes, it does. No caffeine. You can have herbal tea without caffeine, but no caffeine. Caffeine is a drug. I remember having an argument, not an argument, but somebody challenging me that, what do? If you're driving and you're tired, you know, you have to get a cup of coffee. You just pull over and take, you know, rest for a little, a few minutes. Rest for 20 minutes or a half hour. They have rest stops, that's what they call them.
And what is the danger? What is the danger in getting intoxicated and trying to do the devotional service? how intoxication stop or jeopardize the devotional service?
Well, of course, intoxication is affecting the mind, the consciousness.